Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is your host, Vinny, along with my co-host, Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, how's it going today, Vin?
Everything is good. We've got a great show. First of all, most importantly, we have a great show because we are only 4 days away from opening day, and it's about time. We said it before, spring training just takes too long, but now here it is. We are only a few days away. And just to add to the excitement, the Mets actually had a pretty big week. There were a couple of transactions. There's actually 2 trades, and we probably both fainted when we heard about one, considering Sandy's reluctance to make any moves. And then he turns around and made another the same day. An extension signed, rumors of another extension. I mean, this is the kind of activity that an actual general manager makes, Mike.
Sandy is... Definitely, he came to the office this week. He's working this week. And I appreciate
also have
it.
Me too. And in a few minutes, we're going to have a special guest. We've got Jared Diamond, who covers the Mets for the Wall Street Journal, one of the best Mets beat writers out there. He's going to be joining us today. And we'll also later on have a call from our favorite Artie from Brooklyn. He'll be joining us as well. But first, Mike, I guess let's just talk about, overall thoughts. The Mets had one of the best records. I don't think they had the best winning percentage, but they had, I think, the second most wins or something like that of any team in spring training. And I know spring training records mean absolutely positively nothing, but I think it just added to this whole positive vibe that has been, going on with the team throughout this offseason. So it didn't hurt, put it that way. It doesn't mean anything, but it didn't hurt. And there were some pretty good performances. Harvey, I think, is a standout. But what was your takeaways from spring training, Mike?
Now, when the bell rings for real, we'll find out, right? But nothing terrible. I mean, we had one bad injury, which is Wheeler. And other than that, really nothing awful happened. And I think a lot of times that's the goal in spring. You put your team together and you're kind of hoping to get through it all, get in shape, and not having too many terrible things happen. So I think it was a positive spring.
Yeah, and look, you mentioned the Wheeler injury and there was the Edgen injury, which we'll segue that mm-hmm. into how that led to the trade. But, it's funny. Sandy spent the entire winter talking about the pitching depth. And, you and I were slightly critical, if we're going to be honest. And, it's nice to have depth. But you have to do something with it. But because of the depth and because of the the lack of trades and not moving a G or anything like that, they lost Wheeler, they lost Edgen, and you didn't really feel like they had any major holes in the pitching staff. And that's a credit. Let's give Sandy credit for having that depth and being able to use it so that we didn't miss a beat. Other teams, if they lose a pitcher, are in big trouble. We lost Wheeler, who I thought was due to have a breakout year. And, while it was a bummer, it really didn't change our outlook on the team. And so we have to give Sandy a lot of credit for that.
I think that if there was one place we could afford an injury, it was in the starting pitching. You'd rather not lose anybody. And I had mentioned on a previous podcast, I was kind of hoping for a breakout from Wheeler this year. So... I think it's a loss, but it's the right, again, from sort of a be fortunate standpoint, I think that we have more, that's what the depth of the team is. That's if something's going to happen, we didn't want it to be, let's say a middle of the order hitter. So I think that is a positive, a weird positive.
You're right. Now we talk about how that led to the trades, and that's, making 2 trades on Monday, picking up 2 left-handed relievers, Alex Torres from the Padres, who this transaction, he was probably most known for wearing the giant protective hat last year. But they, all joking aside, nothing to do with the hat. You know, he's a pretty quality relief pitcher. And then they picked up Jerry Blevins, who actually I think is better than average relief pitcher. And in his spring training debut, again, spring training means nothing, but his spring training Met debut, he struck out Bryce Harper on three pitches. That goes a long way to getting you into the Met family, in my book. And for these trades, you know, Sandy didn't really give up much. He gave up middle-of-the-road minor leaguers, although some people tried to say that giving up Matt Dendecker to get Blevins was seemed like a little bit of perhaps an overpay. I'm not in that camp, Mike. I mean, I like Dendecker, but I don't think that, you know, he's a future superstar. So I don't mind that he was the piece you had to give up, to be honest with you. But I thought they were both good trades. They fill holes. You know, we went from having no lefties. Now it looks like we're going to actually go into the season with three lefties in the bullpen if Gil Martin makes the team. And now, you know, the bullpen, even with the loss of Edgen, looks pretty strong, in my opinion. What did you think about the deals once you got over the initial shock that they were made, Mike?
Well, yeah, you had to pick me up, you know, off the ground. We hadn't traded for a major league player since Eric Young Jr., which was quite some time ago. And then you can tell, you know, it's like when I go to the gym, and I don't go to the gym enough, but when you finally get there and you start to work out, you get the adrenaline running, and then, you know, maybe you really push yourself a little. And so Sandy made that first deal, and it felt good. And he said, hey, that's right, I can do this. And then he made that second deal, boom, right after that. And I'm happy. Both deals were made definitely with the year 2015 in mind, not 16, 17, 18, 19, et cetera. And, yeah, I'm ready for that. And so I like the ideas behind the trade. We know with trades, you know, we'll see what happens, right? I mean, some work out, some don't, but I like the thinking behind it. Probably the one word of caution I would have, because now they're saying they might keep Gil Martin as well, is that sure sounds like a lot of left-handers to me. But, you know, I would be more than happy now if they just let Gil Martin, you know, go back from where he came from. But that's about the only negative I can find out of it all.
Mike, I was a little surprised to hear that, too, to be honest. I thought that, you know, Gil Martin, while he has had an okay spring, it was only okay. And I would have thought that, you know, people like, you know, Buddy Carlisle, or even a guy like Zach Thornton, although Zach Thornton has options. You know, a guy who, you know, perhaps looked a little better, maybe more effective, a little bit more, you know, guys that you think you should have in there. Instead of Gil Martin, I was a little surprised at that, especially if you end up losing Buddy Carlisle because he doesn't have any options. And I believe he has an out in his contract if he can become a free agent if he doesn't make the team out of camp. So that would be a bit surprising. But as you say, let's not be nitpicky. I'm still very happy that he made the moves. And you hit it on the head, Mike. It's really because it's another sign that we're, you know, in go-for-it mode, you know, as far as we are concerned. And also, you know, just to add to that a little bit, and I don't want to, you know, laugh about salary, but, you know, Blevins actually had a decent salary. I think he made about $2.5 million this year, which I know that that's not big market salary, but, you know, the Mets took on that salary. You know, they didn't try to get cute with money. So I think that that's another good sign that we're actually, you know, in the right frame of mind here.
And even a small, I mean, it's 2.4, I think, or 2.5, you're correct, you know, one of those numbers. But it's at least, this, you know, finally a signal, you know, it wasn't a going out of business sale type of trade. And that's a welcome sign, yes.
I agree. Now the other transaction that was made, that again I think it was good to see, and it involved actually committing a little bit of money, but you know down the road, was that Juan Legarreta signed to an extension, 4-year extension, $23 million plus an option to add another year that would be his first free agency year. I guess the years is 2016 to 2019 with the option for 2020. And, you know, I love the move, Mike. You and I haven't gotten to speak about this yet. I think Legarreta has just tremendous upside. You know, even if he doesn't become an above-average hitter, if he hits a little bit the way he feels, you know, he is an important piece, especially with this team. We can talk a little bit about the defensive shortcomings of this team. I mean, he stands out like a sore thumb that he's one of the only guys on the field who can catch the ball. And it's a great sign, too. Again, some of it is a little bit more, you know, what does it show? What's the impression that it gives? Again, it gives the impression that this is a team that we're going to invest in and that we really believe in. The front office believes in it. Ownership believes in it. Willing to commit the dollars. Bet on the upside of Legarius. I mean, I love the move, Mike.
It was actually my favorite move of the week. I love Legarius. You know, I sing his praises all the time. You know, I'm a huge believer in defense up the middle. He's a fabulous fielder, just an incredible fielder. That limits your risk. I've said this before about him. He could hit 220 and still be worth being on the field, and he sure should be able to do that. So that means, to me, there's only upside. You know, for what they're paying him, they should be able to come out even on this no matter what. I think it's a great move.
I agree. And the other potential extension, I mean, it's not done, and there's actually some reports right before we kind of went on air that they're saying that there's a chance it doesn't get done, but I still think it's worth talking about, is that the Mets having discussions on trying to do a similar type of extension with Lucas Duda. Look, again, I think from an optics perspective, I like it. I like what it implies by trying to lock the team up, trying, you know, that sort of thing. And also, you know, power hitters, which Duda did hit 30 home runs last year, you know, are in such short supply that trying to lock him up, I could see that. And if it happened, I wouldn't have a problem with it. However, you know, I'm not as in love with the idea as I am about Legarius, because I'm not quite sure what I have in Lucas Duda. Let's not forget, we had a 30-year home run hitting first baseman a couple of years ago who is now, you know, a distant memory in Ike Davis. So that kind of thing can turn around pretty quickly. However, a lot of it would depend on the dollars that you're committing. But again, in some ways, you know, I'd be neutral on it. I don't think I'd be upset by it, but I wouldn't be as excited I am about Legarius. So what are your thoughts on a potential Duda extension?
Yeah, I'm not all excited about extending Duda. I wouldn't mind if they didn't do it. I think he's nice to have right now. He's also not young. You know, he's kicked around a long time. I think he turns 30 this year. I'm not so sure. You know, last year wasn't. I don't want to sound overly negative about Lucas, but I'll believe he can do even what he did last year again when he does it again. So I wouldn't be too quick to. Hopefully, it's not a lot of money.
Right. No, I don't think it would be a lot of money. I do think it would be more money than Legarius. I do. But, you know, I don't think it would be. Let's face it. I don't think Sandy is going to do the deal unless he thinks he's going to, you know, make out on the deal. If it gets done, I would have a hard time believing that the Mets would be overpaying. But I'm with you, Mike. I don't know if I, you know, completely love the deal. Now, of course, as soon as word got around that, you know, extensions for young players was coming up, you know, people started clamoring about, well, why aren't they looking to do a deal with Matt Harvey? I don't think that's going to happen. And, you know, just by nature of his agent being Scott Boras, I mean, I can't see that deal happening. I think they're going to try to get the most out of every year's arbitration and then get the biggest deal when they can get to free agency. I don't know what you think about that. I think there's a better shot that there's actually conversations with Jacob DeGrom than there are with Matt Harvey.
Yeah, then forget it. Boras is the agent. Harvey's going to be a free agent someday. Ride it all the way. Get everything you can out of him while you can.
That's the way you have to think, let's face it. But, you know, I'm not going to be one of these doom and gloom guys, Mike. I'm not going to be sitting around worrying about what happens to you. He's a free agent and all that. You can't live like that. Life's too short. He's not going to be a free agent for a few years. Let's win a few World Series with him on the team and worry about that when the time comes, right?
Live for today.
Live for today. Well, you know, look, I said...
Let's live in the moment.
Mike, we haven't had the opportunity to live in the moment. We haven't had the opportunity to live in the moment in a while, so the fact that we're doing it now is not a bad thing, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Listen, we have our very special guest on the air with us right now. He is—he covers the Mets for the Wall Street Journal. He's one of my favorite beat writers. I know you love him too, Mike. It's Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal. How are you, Jared?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Excellent,
really good,
excellent.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for joining us. We know you just got back from England, so hopefully you're not feeling it jet lagged or anything like that.
No, we're good to go. Ready for opening day.
Excellent, excellent. So, what was your speaking of being ready for opening day? I mean, the Mets, spring training. Mike and I were just talking about how spring training results. We all know they don't mean anything. But they had a very successful, Grapefruit League. I think they led the Grapefruit League in wins. They really looked like it. They had a lot of standout performances, like Harvey especially, looking really like better than ever, actually. What are you thinking about in terms of how we look coming out of spring training and how the team is prepared for the season?
Well, you have to be encouraged. Everyone knows that these numbers in spring training don't mean anything. And, pretty much every study into spring training statistics has shown that they're not necessarily indicative of what's going to happen in the regular season. But, look, if you're a Mets fan today, you're feeling great about how they look over the last month or so. They hit great. Matt Harvey, coming off the elbow injury, looked even better than he did in 2013, if that's possible. So even though you might know sort of intuitively that the numbers don't mean anything, you'd still rather see everybody hitting the cover off the ball and everybody throwing 100 miles an hour than have them all struggling. So I think everyone's feeling good. The players are feeling good. They're extremely confident after the spring they had. And I think if you're a fan, you have to have a little more confidence now than maybe you did at the start of the Grapefruit League.
I think most Mets fans would agree with you, Jared. If you could single, I know you mentioned Matt Harvey, but if you could single out anyone else who you thought, really impressed you or you think, seems pretty poised for a solid season, is there anyone else that you would single out as somebody who you think is really looking good heading into the season?
I think the most encouraging sight all spring, even more than Matt Harvey, was David Wright. And, he didn't hit as well as some of the other guys did. He didn't hit 340 like Michael Kadire did or Juan Magar did. But what he did do is hit a couple home runs. I think he hit four home runs, including one that went about 460 feet into straightaway center field. And if you're a Mets fan, that's so encouraging because David went through long stretches last year where he could barely hit the ball out of the infield, let alone hit it over the fence. I mean, he was so in so much pain and was sapped of so much last season that to see him drive the ball to center, drive the ball to right field consistently this spring suggests that, maybe he has the power back, that he's healthy. And if the Mets are going to be good, they need David Wright to be something closer to the David Wright of old. Seeing that was, I think, incredibly encouraging.
No, and Jared, without David Wright, the lineup could really be in trouble. So, having him bounce back would be, go a long way to having it be a complete team, especially with the starting rotation. Another thing that really made it seem like a complete team was the surprising, double team moves on Monday of Sandy Alderson going out and acquiring two left-handed relievers, in getting Jerry Blevins and Alex Torres. I wanted to get your thoughts on those trades, both in terms of, were they good trades in terms of what was given up, and what do you think it, kind of showed for, what ownership and what Sandy Alderson is thinking about the team and its prospects?
It's incredible that, the Mets trading for Jerry Blevins and Alex Torres is as big of a story as it was. But that just shows where the Mets are and what they've been for the last 4 or 5 years, where they trade. They add, $2 million or less than $2 million of payroll and acquire two lefty relievers that I think it's fair to say that three-quarters of Mets fans probably had never heard of until Monday, and there's probably some that still have never heard of them. But these are the little moves that make a team, make a team better. Clearly they had a hole. Josh Edgen, they had a hole in left-handed relief before Josh Edgen goes down. And then when Josh Edgen went down, that hole turned into a valley that was poised to suck the whole bullpen in with it. So they definitely solved that problem between Blevins and Torres. They should be now fine from the left side, especially with Blevins, who is a guy who's very good against left-handed pitching in that specialist role. Torres is more of a guy that will give you full innings. He actually, in his career, has been just as good, if not better, against right-handers. So he probably isn't the guy you're going to see coming in the eighth inning to face Freddie Freeman, but that's what Blevins does. But between the two of them, they definitely have improved the bullpen. You definitely feel better about the state of the bullpen now with those two guys on board, and they didn't have to give up that much. Matt Dendecker was not going to be a part of the team in any meaningful capacity this season or probably ever at this point. And Corey Mazzoni, while is a prospect that some of the organization like, he's so far down the depth chart compared to some of these other guys that they have that, like we've said so many times, at some point it doesn't make sense to have 12 starting pitchers that you like. So to get a useful piece in Alex Torres for him, I don't think he was unreasonable. And like I said, the bullpen is in clear better position than it was a week ago.
So, and we agree, and if we think the bullpen is in good shape, we all love the starting rotation, we think the lineup is, you know, got the right tools, no pun intended, if David Wright is back. What do you worry about with this team heading into the season?
Well, there's a few things. I think the biggest thing is going to be defense in every position, essentially, other than center field. Now, Juan Lagares could cover a lot of ground. He makes up for a lot of deficiencies in the outfield. So perhaps he could overcome the fact that Kadire and Granderson really are below average and cover very little ground. But what Juan Lagares can't fix is the infield. And we know, we've seen Daniel Murphy play for a long time at second base. We know what he can do. And more importantly, we know what he can't do, which is a lot. And Wilmer Flores, who has hit very well this spring and by all indications will hit all season long and hit very well down the stretch last year as well. And he, defensively, he is at best average, and that even might be a stretch. And this is the team that's the emphasis is on starting pitching and pitching in general. And they're going to have defense that's not going to make a lot of plays behind them. And I think that's a legitimate concern, maybe more of a concern than Mets fans want to acknowledge. And the other thing is the lineup. Now, I know they hit really well all spring long, but this is still a team that was 26th in baseball in OPS last year. And the only addition they made was Michael Kadire, who's 36 years old, and who knows how many games he's going to play before something breaks. So I think despite the spring they had, you still have to be a little nervous about whether or not they'll score enough runs.
You know, and I think that was the problem last year. And I think that even the Kadire acquisition, and to a lesser extent, you know, picking up somebody like John Mayberry Jr. off the bench, you feel like it's not enough. And hopefully, you get the bounce back year from Wright. You get some improvement from Lagares. You figure out how to get a few runs here and there. That's the hope. But as far as the defense is concerned, you know, you wrote an article probably about a week and a half ago that, you know, Mike and I thought was pretty fascinating about how the Mets seem to be trying to find ways to compensate for the general poor fielders that they have by getting a little bit more into, you know, analysis of defensive positioning and really trying to take that to the next level. You want to talk a little bit about that, Jaja?
Yeah, sure. That's the future. It's the wave sweeping baseball is defensive positioning analysis and data, and the Mets are really trying to move to the forefront of it because, like we said, they know that their infielders aren't going to cover very much ground, so they've committed a lot of time and resources to coming up with reams and reams of information so that they will be able to, in theory, move their infielders around and many times pitch by pitch, even more so than batter by batter. And these are things that infielders have done intuitively for a long time. Since baseball existed, you would have infielders, okay, if there's a guy that likes to pull the ball, I'll shade toward the hole. If a guy looks the other way, the shortstop will shade up the middle. If a pitcher throws a lot of 95-mile-an-hour fastballs, they're more likely to hit it the other way, and they'll shade that way. But this is a lot more sophisticated what the Mets are talking about. This is looking at, okay, how does Freddie Freeman typically handle curveballs on 2-2 counts? And how can we move our infielders to reflect how we typically handle those situations? And that's what they're going to be doing. And it's going to be subtle. It's not necessarily going to be something that if you're a fan you will notice, especially watching on TV. Maybe you will so more if you're in the ballpark. But the idea is that they will be able to put their infielders in a place that will save them a step or two, and that can make the difference between a ground ball single and a ground ball out. In many cases, it's just one step. One step the right direction could be the difference between an RBI single and a double fly, and that's how significant it can be. So now we'll see how good the Mets data is. We'll see how and how much it helps. Now, will it cover up the fact that Wilmer Flores and Daniel Murphy are below average infielders? Not entirely. You know, I think everyone, including the Mets, realize that there's only so much you can do. You can't have them everywhere all the time, but it's better than nothing, and they're certainly trying their darndest to make this work.
You know, and as a fan, Jared, it's encouraging to see that. I mean, to know that they are not just, you know, closing their eyes and crossing their fingers and hoping that these guys can field the ball, that they are really doing everything they can to figure out through analytics how to do it. I mean, it's encouraging. Will it work? We shall see. But for me, as a fan, I think it's a very encouraging thought. Now, Jared, I know you only have a couple minutes, so we got to put you on the spot a little bit before we let you go.
Okay.
With opening day 4 days away, what's your prediction? Do you think that this team has enough to contend for the second wild card spot at least with what we have and what the rest of the division looks like?
I do believe that the Mets are in a position where we will be going into September still talking about the Mets competing for the playoffs. I don't think that's unreasonable, especially with the second wild card, which we've seen, it doesn't take that much to be in contention for that second wild card. Really what the Mets need to do is just stay close, stay in contention, stay over that 500 mark going into September. And once that happens, you're just talking about a handful of wins down the stretch that can make all the difference. 3-4 wins is often all that separates the second wild card from the middle of the pack in the National League. So, yes, I think they certainly have a chance. Do I think they're good enough to run away with the division and win 90 to 95 games? Probably not. Of course, anything's possible. We've seen stranger things in baseball. But, look, if on the spot, do I think this is an 87 to 88 win team? No, I think they're probably more of an 83 to 85 win team. But when you're talking about an 83 to 85 win team, the difference between 84 and 87 wins or whatever is so little that once you're in that neighborhood, anything is possible, and I see no reason why if things don't break the right way, they can't go from that 82 to 84 win team to that 85 to 88 win team, and that all of a sudden puts them in the playoffs potentially.
And that's what we're all thinking, Jared. I think we're all thinking we could just hang around middle of the pack, you know, just slightly ahead of the middle of the pack. You know, perhaps there's even a midseason move that pushes us over the top with a lot of the depth that we have in the minor league system. That, you know, it's very realistic. So we're with you. Mike, Jared only has a couple minutes. Do you have any other questions for him tonight?
Just a softball question for Jared. I take it it's the Nationals. So other than the Nationals, anybody in particular in the division that you think could be very interesting this year?
Oh, everyone's talking about Miami, and there's been a lot of speculation about how good they're going to be. And I do like the Marlins. I think they're a good team. I don't know how good they're going to be. I think they have a lot of question marks, too. I actually look at the Marlins similarly to the Mets, where they're a team that could be a 500 team or could be an 88-win team, and it all depends on how things shake out for them. I think the Mets and the Marlins are going to be going neck and neck throughout the season. And we'll see which one's better. And I don't know. I don't think it's possible. No, I think they're very comparable. And they're, you know, the Marlins are getting Jose Fernandez back at some point, but the rest of their pitching is sort of questionable. And the Mets pitching is very good. The Marlins lineup looks decent right now, but you know, who knows? I think those two teams are going to be battling, and I could see those two teams battling all the way for a wild card spot. I don't think that's out of the question.
No, great. Well, listen, Jared, we really appreciate you joining us. We thank you so much, and we really love your work. Again, we said it before, we said it if you weren't on the air, you're one of our favorite Met beat writers. We think your stuff is consistently just really great, and we thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. I'd love to do it again when the season gets going.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You got it.
So there was Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, look, I think that everyone is kind of on board with what Jared said, that we think that we're heading towards the kind of season where we're going to be in it. We're going to be close. We're not going to be running away. But at this point, man, I'll take that.
Oh, that's the best it's been in a while.
Yes. So, Mike, we made Jared give us his prediction. I know you have some predictions you wanted to talk about tonight. Some of them serious, some of them maybe not so serious. But why don't you run through a few things that you're predicting for the season?
Yeah, I think it's that time of year, Vinny, and I think one of the things we owe everybody is a number, right, at some point. But this is something that I've always done. We did it on our blog, Jim Preller and I. We don't take these too seriously, but I don't just make one or two predictions. I make a whole bunch. So let's see what we've got this year.
Okay, let's hear.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Vin? Okay, so
yes,
I had a problem
there.
On a technical end. Okay. Matt Harvey is excellent, and people are disappointed. Wilma Flores catches everything he can reach, which isn't much. Curtis Granderson hits a lot of home runs, but not much else. Kevin Long takes a second job as the fourth man in the booth during games for SNY. A feature film version of Sandy Alderson, Baseball Maverick, is announced. Abe Vigoda will play Sandy, and Jerry Lewis takes a turn as Terry Collins. Michael Kadaya stays healthy and hits well. Jake DeGrom has a big year with bigger hair.
I have to stop you right there for a second. He needs to have the hair for two now, because Henry Mejia cut his hair. So he's carrying the mantle of, you know, big-haired Mets on his own now. So he really needs it.
I think that's a big mistake. You know, I think he should have kept the hair, Henry. I think, you know, well, one thing we learned last year is big hair is successful. A little bit more serious. Daniel Murphy walks away from the Mets at the end of the season.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah, you see what I did there. I'll get a little more serious from here on out. The words Noah Syndergaard in July 2016 start entering sentences this year. Yeah, sorry. Lucas Duda takes a step back. And good news, the Mets are over 500 on July 31st. Bad news, they make no moves at the deadline. Sandy Alderson begins to use...
Did you make that prediction before or after Monday?
As excited as I am about the enormous Blevins and Torres moves, I will stand by that prediction. Sandy Alderson uses the word internal options over 100 times during the season. Terry Collins is given a 5-year extension. The team does fall out of the wild card race in September. 82 wins. And I'm done.
Well, look.
It's not that bad. To me, that's really positive.
No, you're trying to inject an ounce of realism and humor into the prediction game, which, you know, most people, especially this season, I would say this season more than any season recently that I can recall, has been, you know, universal Met fan optimism. Obviously, everything we need to go right doesn't always go right. So I can't argue some of the things that you said. You know, for instance, Daniel Murphy walking away at the end of the season. I do think that's going to happen as well. You hate to think about it right now. But you know what? To be fair, I mean, earlier in the call we talked about Matt Harvey and his, you know, potential free agency down the road, even though we shouldn't be worrying about when is that? That's like after the 2017 season or some crazy year like that, right? So we shouldn't be worrying about it, but we are. And even though we're only in 2015, You know, Daniel Murphy could leave at the end of the year. Every game could be his last as a Met. And while he's a good player and we all love him, it's not the same. It's not Matt Harvey. And if he goes, it's not even, I don't know if we're allowed to go an episode without saying the name Jose Reyes. So I'll sneak it in right now just to make, we're probably contractually obligated to say Jose Reyes. It's not like losing Jose Reyes. That's not a devastating blow. The one thing that, look, the Cindy Alderson internal options is probably a lock. I don't even think Vegas would take bets on that. But
the movie's already in pre-production. Just to warn you, the movie's already in pre-production, I heard.
And we may have to talk about the book a little bit in a second. But the one prediction of yours that I think is, A, least likely to happen, and B, lucky it's the least likely because it would upset me the most if it would happen, would be the 5-year extension for Terry Collins. I don't hate Terry Collins. I don't. But I do not want him managing this team for the next 5 years. And the good news is I don't even think Sandy wants him managing for the next 5 years.
Well, let's face it, Terry might not want it either.
You know what? That's a natural segue to something, Mike. You know, there's this book that's been you mentioned it in the prediction for the feature film. There's the book, Sandy Alderson, Baseball Maverick. You know, and I think the subtitle is something to the effect of how Sandy Alderson revived the New York Mets. I had to check to make sure I didn't miss it because I didn't know they were revived. But
I wouldn't want Sandy working on me in the ER.
Oh, that's a good one. So, you know, look, there's been some talk about the book. You know, nothing earth-shattering at all. However, a couple of small tidbits that at least raised your eyebrows a little. One of them was there was some kind of statement about Terry being very close to perhaps being let go last year. I don't know how close he really was. But that was interesting to read, to hear about. I don't get too worked up over that stuff, Mike. You and I have talked about this offline, that, you know, most likely the guy getting the job, if Terry goes, is probably Bob Guerin. It's probably not Wally Backman, who everybody wants. And I'm not too excited about Bob Guerin. That does nothing for my blood pressure, getting Bob Guerin in the manager's seat. The fact that it might not be Terry, but it'll be what does that matter to me? Bob Guerin, right?
Yeah, I think when it comes to the Met manager, it's like the devil you know.
Exactly.
That's fine.
I think the only person who would be happy, or people now, I'm going to have to make it plural after Monday, the only people who would be happy about that are probably the left-handed relievers in the bullpen, because any left-handed reliever who Terry gets his hand on, you know, he should just, as soon as Terry puts you in the first game, you should probably schedule your consultation for Dr. James Andrews, because you know Terry will not stop using you until your arm falls off.
Well, one thing about, selfishly about the trades, and I know they were solid baseball moves if you look at them on paper, but I need my rest these days, and I'm really concerned that, you know, you give Terry 3 lefties, and he's going to feel he has to use all 3 of those guys every night. We could have 5-hour games.
You know, it's true. And then the other thing is, I don't know if you noticed, a little minor minutia tidbit. You know, Torres got the number 53. Carlos Torres is number 52. So now he's got 2. You know he's just going to say, get Torres up. And when the bullpen phone says which one, Terry will say, well, get both of them up. What's the difference? Get them both up. I'll decide later. He'll probably win.
We used to have, you know, I'll go way back, and, you know, if you go way back to the beginning, the Mets had 2 Bob Millers. One was righty and one was lefty. So hopefully, and that was supposedly how they told them apart, you know, get the righty up or get the lefty up. So that's going to have you, somebody's got to tell, like, that's Terry every time. The righty or the lefty?
I'm telling you, his answer is going to be both, Mike.
That's true. We're going to see the 2 of them warming up together all the time, aren't we?
Yeah. He thinks he's got a chance to get both of them going. So, I think that nothing else from the book other than the title that we've joked about. Nothing really was that big of a deal with the book. I don't recall there being any. I haven't read the whole thing. I did get the book. I haven't read the whole thing. But there was nothing, I think, that really came out of it that if you loved Sandy before, you still love him. If you didn't love Sandy before, you don't love him now. Like, it wouldn't have changed anybody's perception of anything, in my opinion, based on what we've read. Any thoughts, Mike,
on the book? I joke, but I didn't read the book, so I'm not going to try to give any negative, you know, or positive in-depth analysis. Because I didn't read it. I did read some excerpts. Nothing in the excerpts got me too hot and bothered in either direction. And, I don't know if I'll end up reading it, but I'm not going to slam it either. I did find the title, which remember, the title most likely was the publishing house, not the author. I thought the title was a little humorous, but that's okay. You got to sell books.
Right. Now, while we're talking about the, we always have to talk about an absurd Met controversy of the week, the AMC, absurd Met controversy of the week. We're going to have to patent that. I think we should make it the absurd Internet controversy, the AIC. The one of this week, this week was actually pretty slow in terms of the absurd controversy. But there was one that was trying to percolate the other day, was that Fred Wilpon was in camp. He had a closed-door meeting with the team, which, by all, third-hand reports, was very positive and upbeat. But, reporters were saying, why, when he left, did he not talk to the press? Why did he not take the opportunity to, give a little bit of a State of the Union? Try to get the fans excited. If you're the owner of the team, why would you not take this opportunity when everybody is positive to go out there and be positive and try to, bang the drum a little bit? There was comparisons that I guess Steinbrenner was on FAN this week, giving his preseason address. Mike, I don't get too worked up about it. I don't need to see Fred Wilpon on TV telling me that he thinks they're going to win or that he's happy or that he wants us to buy tickets. That doesn't sway me in any direction. I thought it was one of these people trying to manufacture a story. While he is an owner of a team and is very high profile, how old is Fred these days, Mike? I don't even know for sure.
He's over 75 years old.
Okay, so he's over 75 years old. Does he really want to be in front of the camera and behind the microphones constantly? I don't think so. So it didn't bother me at all, Mike. I don't know what you thought.
I'm not known for being the guy defending Fred, or any of the Wilpons. But in this particular case, at this stage of his life, if Fred doesn't want to talk, Fred doesn't have to talk. And what happens is the writers, so most of the controversy got started by all these guys complaining. And, we just had Jared on, and it's tough work. You're down there in the trenches, and everybody's trying to get a story. And here Wilpon was there, and if they can get a couple of quotes, let's face it, it's great for their edition the next day. So they get frustrated, but, stepping back is the guy who doesn't have to make a living, pumping out a newspaper story every day. I get it from Fred's perspective, and he doesn't have to, he doesn't have to do it. I've been critical of Sandy from time to time in that I feel if he doesn't have anything to say, why is he constantly talking? Like I always feel, when you get these dead off seasons and he ends up on FAN and he's here and he's there and he's defending the payroll and he's doing this, and I think, why not just not be around? If you don't have anything to say, don't say anything. So I'm not going to criticize Fred for not saying anything.
No, look, one of the things about Sandy, though, that, just to follow up on your point, the thing that bothers me is not his visibility. I kind of like having the GM be out there and be visible. The issue to me is that he doesn't really say anything. We joke
around
about
how... Right, if you don't have anything to say, that's what I'm saying. If you don't have anything to say, right?
Right.
Why go on the air? If he had something to say, that would be different. And in Fred's case, no matter who it is, I think we would both agree... Actions speak louder than words anyhow, and it's nothing, and Jared made the joke, and he's right. We've all been so beaten down and conditioned that we're, thrilled that 2.4 Jerry Blevins,
right.
But it did. So that's the best thing. As far as I'm concerned, that's a big week from Fred. You know, he opened up the wallet and to do something. I'll take that over him having a dopey, you know, press conference every day.
No, I agree. Again, I think, and we'll probably, unfortunately, Mike, we're probably going to have this kind of conversation, and we've had it, you know, all off season. We're going to have these kind of, you know, contrived almost, you know, I call them the absurd controversies, just because that's the world that we're living in with the Mets right now. You know, everything is viewed through that lens. The fan base, until we start winning, is going to be kind of ready for that. It's not just the fan base. It's also the media. That's the role we play. We play the team that is cheap, that does crazy things, that, you know, you can't get it right. You know, it's the same chord that gets played around the New York Jets in this town. For similar reasons, you know, the Giants don't get it because they've won a lot recently. The Yankees don't really get it because they won a lot. But the Mets and the Jets get it because they just can't seem to get it right. And I think the Mets are going to play that role in the media until they win. And so we're
right,
gonna deal
it's
with
an easy
everything.
Narrative, and it's going to get used, and that's just the way it is.
Right. So we'll see. Look. One other thing I want to touch on before we get, you know, Artie's going to be joining us in a minute or two. The opening day is Monday, 4 days away. We open in Washington. I will actually be taking the trip down to Washington to go to the game. I'm pretty excited about that.
Congratulations. I didn't know that.
Yeah, no, it falls on a good day where we can actually do it.
Great idea.
But also, you know, the Mets, what they're doing this year that I can't recall them ever doing before, Shea or City, is they're having a viewing party at Citi Field where fans can go and you know, watch the game on the brand new state of the art, you know, Diamond Vision or whatever we're calling it screen. And you know, there's some room. I think they were talking on FAN that they've had a pretty big, you know, RSVP. I don't know if it's a sale because it may be free or it's pretty cheap. I'm not sure. But it sounds like, you know, a lot of fans have already committed to that. That's a pretty good sign. It really does show you the optimism and what's going on. And, you know, opening day, obviously, big gate. Harvey's going to be the second game of the home season. You know, there's going to be, I think you're going to see the Mets, you know, a lot of fans show up early in the season. There's this optimism. If they get off to a good start, they can really carry them. I would hate to see what happens if they don't, Mike. We'll see about that. But hold on, let's turn our attention to the one and only Artie from Brooklyn. Artie's joining us. Hello, Artie, Mike, and Vinny. How are you today? Artie? We got Artie there?
He's quiet.
I have to give Artie a second. Well, yeah, it can't be Artie if he's that quiet, because that's not the Artie we know. I don't know what Artie's going to want to talk about tonight. We'll see.
So one thing about the viewing party that you're forgetting is it might be generating interest because people can't wait to see the new scoreboard.
Right. That could be. And so now they're adding a new one. It's not a scoreboard, but they're adding a sign outside. So, you know, they've got two lefty relievers and two screens this winter. I think that's the goal. That's what they want to say they have. It's Noah's Ark. Let's get two of everything. Artie, are you on the line?
Yes, Vinny, can you hear
me? There he is. Yes, how are you, Artie?
How you guys doing? How you going, Mike?
Very good.
We're good. Right. We're good. Are you excited for the season, Artie?
This is what I'm excited about. This will probably be Cologne's largest crowd watching him, and it's not even in. It's not even live.
We were just talking about the big viewing party. I mean, the fans are excited, Artie. Are you excited about this season? Are you a positive Mets fan going into the season?
I am very positive, all pumped up. I just want to be known that somebody's got to realize that when you make the playoffs in a World Series, you got to have a good defense, a good defensive infield. And if we make the playoffs with this infield, especially now. It's so, you know what's funny? Murphy's out. And instead of putting DeJada at short and putting Flores at second, they're going to decide to put an even worse infielder in there. So we'll definitely. And then in the seventh or eighth inning, when we have Familia in there, we'll have nobody to be able to throw the ball at first base.
You know, if there's that infield and there's Familia on the mound, he better strike everybody out. Because if that ball hits the bat, we're in big trouble.
No. They can hit the center field.
Yes. And one more thing with Terry. I mean, I know the rumors are going on. Maybe he won't do this. But this batting ninth, putting the pitcher up eighth, I mean, can somebody let him know that the idea is not to put, I understand when DeGrom is probably a better hitter than Tejada, but the idea is not to put a worse hitting hitter in there, eighth, so you could just start the inning over with somebody batting ninth, like Lacaris or wherever else he's going to put up ninth. Okay, and putting Flores up eighth is really defeating the purpose. If he's batting eighth, then he shouldn't be playing shortstop. He's not that good of a hitter to be batting. If he's batting eighth, he's not that good of a hitter to be playing shortstop. It's just the whole thing is really bothering me. I mean, I just think that they're going to lose more games on the field than they are with Flores batting eighth. And I don't know how you guys feel about it. I mean, I know, Mike, you're not a big DeJada fan, and that's fine. Yeah, I understand you got a good offensive play, but the fact is that he is your best fielding shortstop. And even with the chance to play him at short with Murphy out, it looks like they're going to go with Reynolds at second base. And then I just looked at his stats. He's got 16 errors playing the infield. I mean, this guy, he's worse than Murphy. All right, guys. Thanks a lot, man.
Hey. Thank you, Artie. We'll talk to you again next time. You know, Mike, you and I have not talked about this whole pitcher batting eighth thing. Another great call from Artie, by the way. But, you know, look, I actually think it's crazy. And I know that there is some statistical analysis that have been done and all that. But, you know, I think about it very simply. Each spot in the lineup, that's more during the game, right? The first spot is going to get more at-bats than the second spot, than the third spot. So why are we putting the pitching spot up where it's going to bat more? You're going to be having to run through pinch hitters. You're going to use your pitcher early in the game. You know, it's simple to me. And I don't understand. You know, maybe I'm just not smart enough. Maybe it's above my pay grade. But if I look at it that simply, I'm like, you know, why do I want to put the pitcher spot higher and have a better likelihood that that's going to come up more times during the game than the eighth spot? Yeah, I don't understand it, Mike.
Well, you know how in the best, I'm going to try to be positive, and you know how in football, you know, teams will run plays that they'll never run during a regular season because they just want the other teams to, you know, they have to have it in the scouting report. So I'm hoping when they talk about this nonsense that they just want to give, you know, the Nationals one more thing to think about or something, because it's insane. One of the reasons I've heard in the past from in general, you know, I don't agree with it, right? I like pitching, betting the stupid pitcher night. Come on, you know. But one of the reasons you'll hear from time to time is it's a way to get, quote, a second leadoff hitter into the game. Well, we don't have one leadoff hitter, so how can you get two into the game? It just doesn't make any sense on a lot of levels, and I hope it's you know, I hope it's just one of those ideas. One thing about Terry too, I think, is that sometimes he gets excited and he starts talking, and you know, it's almost like he doesn't have a filter. You know, whatever sort of, you know, he brainstorms out loud. So hopefully it's not going to happen. I just can't imagine they're going to do it. I guess if they did it when DeGrom's playing, depending on what we think of him as a hitter, he could have some crazy, you know, be okay. But otherwise, it's nuts. I mean, if you're doing it with Cologne, it's just absolutely insanity.
Yeah, I just don't get it, Mike. I don't. And our bench is not so deep that we're thinking about, you know, oh, great, we're going to be able to use all our pinch hitters and all that stuff. I mean, I do not get it. I just don't. But what Artie's other point about defense, and I know we've talked about it before, I know, you know, we've spent this whole offseason talking about shortstop and Flores and Tejada, and, you know, Artie's point was, you know, one or the other. My point is, why does it have to be one or the other? They're not the only two guys on the planet to play shortstop. Now, I'm willing to
roll the dice. What's done is done, Vinny. Let it go.
No, you're right. I was just going to say it, Mike. What's done is done. Let's roll the dice. Let's see what Flores does, both with the bat and on the field. You know, Jared, when he was on earlier, talked about the defensive positioning. You know, and if, you know, who is that Garen's job? Like, whose job is it to move them every
right.
pitch? I mean, that's got to be crazy. But,
well,
you know, if
I think that
worked,
the defensive positioning is very interesting. Remember, we brought that up a few times this offseason that, you know, perhaps that's part of the strategy because they're. Hopefully there's a strategy. That's the first thing. And then the second thing is, the one thing about, like, our bad fielders is what's wrong with them is primarily range. You know, Flores in particular seems to catch what, like, is he gets to, you know, whatever that is. So, you know, if range is the problem, maybe they do think they can mitigate some of that by moving these guys around. Be interesting to see. I have not felt in the last few years that we actually shifted as much as a lot of our opponents. So we'll have to see how much they do it this year.
No, it's true. It's true. We are not one of these extreme shift teams. We're not, you know, Joe Maddon moving guys all over
right.
the field. But, you know, obviously this is something that they've looked at, and I said this when we had Jared on. You know, not that I'm looking to be Pollyanna on everything, but the fact that they're actually doing this and that they see the shortcomings and they're trying to figure out what can they do. You can't, you know, bionically change these guys into great fielders. So, you know, what can we do with anything else in our arsenal to try to, you know, mitigate what kind of damage a poor defense can have on us? You know, it's good. Now it's got to happen. You got to see it executed. But at least it's positive to me. It is.
Should be in their wheelhouse. You know, these guys are data guys, so, you know, that this is the new thing in data. But, you know, Vinny, I'm not letting – one thing, though, before we were off, I'm not letting you off the hook. I gave a number. I'm expecting a number out of you tonight.
I'm going to give you my number of wins. I'm going to give you – I'm much more comfortable giving you my number of wins than to give you what I think it means for making the postseason.
No, I don't need to know what it means. Just give me the number.
Okay. My number is 84.
Okay, so we're not that far
winning,
apart.
I think they're winning 84 games. I do.
Okay.
Does that get you the second wild card? You know, my gut tells me it might not be enough, but you just don't know. Here's another thing. I look around the league, and there's a lot of teams in the National League that I am down on this year that I just don't think is that good. So when you start adding it up, you say, well, wait a minute. If somebody's getting that spot, so it only comes down to a team like, in my opinion, you know, the Marlins. You know, do you think you're getting a second playoff team out of the West? I actually think that the Giants are taking a step back this year. So then you go to the Central, you know, it's, you know, how much, I think the Cardinals are clearly better and should win the division. But, you know, between the Pirates and the Cubs, do you think either one of those teams is winning more than 84 games? Now, I don't know. I don't know about that. So if
right.
you start crossing teams off the list.
No, it's interesting. It doesn't take much these days. It really doesn't. So, I mean, I think we're in a brave new world when it comes to that. We have to recalibrate as fans a little bit about what it takes to be excited because you don't need to win 95 games anymore to be part of the party.
Well, and I also think, again, not to sound too much like I'm drinking the Kool-Aid here, but if this team gets into the postseason, they're mentally the kind of team that is dangerous in a short series because of their pitching. So, you know, it's almost like if we could just figure, I don't care if we sneak in on a tiebreaker last game nonsense, all of a sudden I feel pretty good about our chances to go pretty deep into the postseason just by virtue of the fact that they're going to pitch every day. So in that sense, I would say I am putting myself squarely into the optimistic camp heading into the season. Mike, we only have another minute before we go. You know, the our Met of the Week, you know, I'm going to cheat a little bit, Mike. I'm going with Lagares, getting his extension. He's a guy we both love. And I do think that he's going to have a pretty good year. I think he could possibly be an all-star. You know, that has nothing to do with his performance. It's almost like a numbers game, too. I don't think he's going to hit, you know, all-star hitting, but I think he's going to hit enough.
I'm a big Lagares guy. I think there's upside. I think there's actually upside with the bat. We know the glove is, you know, fabulous. I think again, best move all week, signing Lagares.
All right, that about does it for the show tonight. Say we want to definitely thank Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal for joining us. We want to thank Artie from Brooklyn for his call. And I will be at the game on Monday. We will have our next show scheduled. Thank you. We will schedule our show probably not next week. We're going to try to schedule our shows around the schedule, the Met schedule, so that we kind of have it whether it's, you know, day games or off days. So check. We'll let you know when our next show is. And let's go Mets 2015. Thanks again, Mike.
Looking forward to talking about the first place Mets with you soon.
You got it.
Take care.